Good evening. James McCanny here, going right into the show tonight. November 29th, 2007. Tremendous amount of new material to cover tonight. A little bit of a review, first of all, of this past week. And if you did not hear my special regarding Comet Holmes that aired special time, it was 1 o'clock in the morning, Eastern Time, Tuesday, November 27th, this past Tuesday. The archive of that show is now posted on my webpage. Just go to jmccsci.com on the Comet Holmes subpage. Scroll down and look for the link to the Comet Holmes subpage, and you will be able to read the latest information on Comet Holmes and also listen to the archive of that two-hour show. And so, very interesting. I'm not going to go into a lot more detail because I covered that topic so extensively during that time. But I do want to add this on this particular show, that in the future, December 22nd coming up, there is a possibility, due to electrical alignments of Earth, Mars, and Comet Holmes, that Earth may experience some severe late-year weather. And it's always hard to predict weather because it depends on solar conditions. It depends on many other factors. So predicting weather is difficult, but this time period does hold possibility, or all the conditions are right, let's put it that way, for potential for late season, possibly even a hurricane, or possibly typhoon in the Pacific, what they call cyclones sometimes. Around that December 22nd to date, 2007, it could be a little earlier, it could be a little later. And if you remember when I did my weather predictions earlier in the year, I was a guest on quite a few radio shows, and I talked about my weather predictions for the upcoming year 2007. That's back at the beginning of 2007. I said that it would be a relatively quiet year, except for a period around August 12th. And then I said things would be relatively quiet up until the December time frame, when we're going to see some electrical alignments. I'll talk about more about that on my radio shows as those times approach. But Comet Holmes was not known about back in January, so that's a new factor. And on December 22nd, Mars and Earth will have a conjunction. That is, they will be directly aligned with the Sun, so their long, very long electrical tails will align also in close alignment with Comet Holmes. By the way, my special, I talked about the original discovery of Comet Holmes and why did it brighten at that time in 1892, and I discovered the reasoning for that. So at any rate, make sure you do go to my webpage and listen to the Comet Holmes two-hour special, because it's packed full of information. And, of course, the reason for that special was because of an ongoing problem on the internet and on certain radio shows where they continue to post imposters. People that are pretending to be degreed or have credentials who don't are trying to copy the work of other people and promote themselves. So that was the main cause of that special being aired. And but anyway, as I said, just go listen to that. It's self-explanatory. But the one thing I did want to reiterate in this show is the fact that around December 22nd, we could see some severe late-year weather, including hurricanes. These hurricanes could move far north into the North Atlantic, or we could see them developing over land, like through the Midwest, as we saw in 1991, when, remember, we had the October 31st Halloween blizzard, a tremendous storm which combined with two other major storms to form what we now call the perfect storm, 1991. So here we are in 2007. We have a celestial electrical alignment condition, and I'll be talking about more about that in the future. By the way, the main science topic for tonight will be mountain building. And I'm going to go through the solar system somewhat and pick out particular mountain ranges in the solar system and talk about them, how they formed, and what the cause of mountain building really is. So that's the main science topic. Covers a lot of range and a lot of different concepts, including both mechanical and electrical causes of mountain building. So that's very shortly in the show after I get through with a few announcements here. I just want to thank, regarding the Comet Home special that occurred this past week, I want to thank specifically WWCR Radio out of Nashville, and of course they carry my shortwave show on 5.070. I want to thank them, the staff, the incredible work that went behind the scenes very rapidly, very smoothly, to get that show produced and on the air within a couple short day notice. Everybody was extremely cooperative. I just am very pleased that everything came off without a hitch. The entire world was listening to this show, as well as Reality Radio Network carried two live streams on the internet, and this was it was heard worldwide. Also, there was a tremendous amount of networking. I have a large range of radio shows where I'm a regular guest. People like me because I tell the truth. I'm an honest person. I have worked hard throughout my life, paid my dues, and when people mess with me, other people that like me do not like to see this happening. So the cooperation and the I was guest for a lot of times just 5 or 10 minutes on many radio shows over the weekend prior to the 2 hour Comet Home special, just giving a brief announcement at the time and the place for people to go and listen, and also out organizations who had networking capability or email groups. The word went out, and it went far and wide and fast. And so my thanks and hats off to the people who made that show a tremendous success. And it's very important that the worldwide community understand disinformation, why certain things happen, who's working behind the scenes, and that's the biggest thing. A lot of times the reason for this is not the people who have their name in lights or in public, but it's people working behind the scenes to bring disinformation and use some of these outlets. And a lot of times you never hear the names of those people who are working behind the scenes. If you did, they would become very unpopular very quickly, so they hide. They're kind of sneaks and very back alley type of people, let's put it that way, to put it kindly, that work behind the scenes to try and bring damage to me and my work, to bring imposters to who try and steal my work, etc. So, but anyway, on the positive side, thank you to all the people who networked, brought the awareness up. And here's one of the extremely positive results of this entire exercise and episode, that now, in case of emergency, and I'm not going to do this on a regular basis, because I have my regular show where I can air, it's worldwide, I have my web page that gets a lot of attention, but in case of emergency now, I know that I can turn to a couple people and very swiftly and very effectively and get the word out to a wide range, to a worldwide network of audience, that something would be going on. I can post it on my internet page, and within a very short amount of time, have an emergency broadcast. And as I say, this won't happen all the time. I'm not going to do this repeatedly, but I believe it's important to know that when something big is going on, turn to my webpage, look for emails, and I will be broadcasting. If it's of immediate concern, I will be able to, and it's a very important concern, I would be able to put up a show within a very short amount of time and have worldwide coverage. That is impressive. And once again, I appreciate all the help of the people who worked diligently behind the scenes to make that happen, because it was Saturday morning when I actually made the first phone calls to try and put this together, and all I got was total cooperation. It was just amazing and wonderful to see. And so once again, thanks to all the people that made that possible. Just a quick note before we go into the main science topic. December 9th is the last day. Now that's a Sunday, midnight Central Time. That is the last day cutoff time to order for Christmas presents. If you want these delivered, we can ship directly to a recipient of your choice. But that has to be our cutoff date, so we have plenty of time to get deliveries to those people. We're going to have extra people staffed to process orders, and then the next Monday, the 10th, we will be shipping. And note that if there are foreign orders, it may take a bit longer, but within the 50 states, we should be able to get everything to the recipients on time, certainly prior to the Christmas holidays. But we've chosen that date as a cutoff time. So if you do want to order either on the internet or by mail order, please have those orders to us before the 9th. So that means that if you, for example, right after this show, sent in a mail order, we would get that. We would have plenty of time to process it, and you would get whatever you ordered within plenty of time for the holidays. And since Christmas is the last holiday of the year, that's what we're targeting here. But, okay, so just quickly, just a reminder what the products are. Berkey water filter, something that everybody needs, $339. I'll just run through these very quickly. You get the Berkey water filter. There are no hookups, no electricity, no hoses, no pumps. You just pour water in the top, clean, fresh water. Filtered water comes out the bottom. These are used for emergency around the world, and I use mine on my sink every day. We have a big pitcher in the refrigerator, and once people start drinking that water, you would be surprised. That pitcher gets empty really fast. We're filling it up 2-3 times a day. And so anyway, $339 for the Berkey. The big Berkey water filter. To California, we ship the travel Berkey, which is the equivalent. You get two black Berkey filter elements plus two extra ones. And I will not sell this without the two extras. You will need those in case of emergency. The filter elements are, you can clean them, and they last for a very long time. So in addition to that, you get the free WRX 911 emergency shortwave radio that you can listen to this show and many other shows on. It's what I carry when I go on travel. Tremendous little radio. That's free, plus free shipping to the 50 states. Now, in addition, if you live in an area that has fluoride in the water, I would recommend adding to the $339 the $59 fluoride filter set. You get two fluoride filter elements, and that's for $59 extra. It also takes out arsenic, which is in many wells and also in many city water supplies. So $59 extra for the fluoride additional add-on filter elements. Okay, Silver Biotics will maintain this special just for the holidays for mail order only. If you order on the webpage, then, of course, all of the information is there. Silver Biotics solution of silver. You get three bottles, this is for $70, three bottles, 8-ounce bottles of Silver Biotics. It's a tremendous immune system booster, tremendous for other uses. And along with the three bottles comes the book on how to use it, Dr. Kenneth Friedman's wonderful book. That's included, plus the bottle caps and sprayers that you need to apply this, and free shipping to the 50 states for $70, a wonderful something that everybody needs also. And then, last but not least, my books. Just a couple suggestions for mail order. $35 for the three-book set. That's Planet X, Comets, and Earth Changes, the Surviving Planet X Passage pamphlet, and Atlantis to Tesla, the Colburn Connection. For $25 more, we would include the weather book, 300 pages. So that's $60 for that four-book set, $35 for the first three books. And then for the complete set of DVDs, which includes the eight-video set now remastered on DVD, plus my first DVD lecture of the 20-DVD lecture series, the first DVD is included in this, plus all the books, including the Calculate Primes book, for $140. Quickly, the address, JMCC, P.O. Box 58, Navarre, N-A-V-A-R-R-E, Minnesota, 55392. And I'll give that address again later in the show. But once again, quickly, JMCC, P.O. Box 58, Navarre, Minnesota, 55392. And so I'll give that information at the very end of the show if you get your pencil ready. And, of course, if you go to the webpage, jmccsci.com, then all of the information is there on the order page. And so on to the main science topic for the night, talking about mountain building, something that we all love. They're beautiful. But when they were formed, something very dramatic happened on this planet. And we do have human accounts of mountain building. Now, standard science would like to tell you that this happened, that the mountains were built over a very long period of time, a process they call plate tectonics. They claim that the earth plates are moving around and they push against each other, and this, and in the middle of continents, all of a sudden, magically, these mountain ranges are forced up, and this happens over millions and millions of years, very slowly. But now, a friend of mine was telling me, I didn't see this myself, but it was relayed to me that Discover Channel had a new idea on there, and it's very much a borrowed idea, excuse me, that, and it's kind of a twisted borrowed idea. So anytime I see these coming out of standard science, they always include a twist, which is not true. They were saying on the Discover Channel that an asteroid would hit Earth, or one of the planets, crash into it, cause some kind of a wave to wrap around the Earth and on the, or the planet, whatever, and on the other side of the Earth where the waves converged, that's where mountains would be built. Well, it takes about 2 seconds for somebody with astute thinking and a logical mind to discount this concept of a asteroid causing mountains to be built. And the first reason is because the Earth, although we know there are waves, transverse waves that go through the Earth like after an earthquake, the main shock of an asteroid hitting a planet is absorbed locally. And the way the energy is absorbed is it blasts out a tremendous amount of material pretty much straight up. In other words, the asteroid comes in, hits the planet, causes a crater, and as the material comes blasting out, it's funneled up and almost comes completely straight up and out. And of course, it blasts out in various directions. But most of the energy is absorbed locally. And I've been at crater sites, for example, down in Arizona, near Winslow, Arizona, the big crater. There's the one in Australia, out in the outback. We have many craters on Earth, which are good examples of asteroids crashing into Earth, and nowhere on the opposite side of the planet do you find mountains caused by these particular craters. So at first blush, this theory doesn't hold water. A better place to look is on our very own moon, which is literally covered top to bottom, side to side, with craters. And if that were the case, almost everywhere on the moon, we would have mountains being built on the far side of where the craters were. And since the craters are everywhere, we would have mountain ranges popping up everywhere on the moon. But guess what? There are none, none at all, that would fit the bill with this idea. Many mountain ranges, additionally, are very long. Let's take, for example, the mountain range that starts up in Alaska, in the Yukon. It comes down into the Canadian Rockies, follows down into the American Rockies, which comes down into the Sierra, the mountains on the eastern side of California, goes down to what we call the Sierra Madre, which is the backbone of Mexico, runs all the way down through Central America, and all the way down through the Andes, all the way down to the South Pole. So clearly, this idea that an asteroid would hit and cause mountains on the other side of the planet is patently false. It doesn't explain what we see. Let's take the Himalayas over in southeastern Asia. Simply, once again, this does not fit the bill. Let's look at the Alps. Let's look at the mountain ranges between Spain and France. The Pyrenees. Let's look at any of the other mountain ranges in, say, Western Russia. All of these mountain ranges are long and linear. They don't fit the bill of a little kind of a round mountain range that would occur on the far side of a planet. And let's look at the mountain ranges. Let's look at the far side of the planet and see if, in fact, there's a crater over there. And repeatedly, there is not. Yet, the Discovery Channel would print this, put a diagram of this on their program for children to see. Total misinformation. Once again, with NASA, if they can't figure out how something works, have an asteroid slam into it, and that's their solution. It's pretty pathetic, but this has been going on for decades and decades. So at any rate, the issue, once again, I'm just criticizing this Discovery Channel program, which, like I say, I didn't see, but it was described very aptly by someone who did see it. And this is what really aggravates me. I have a subpage on my webpage called Peer Review, a critique of peer review. Here's a great example where no one reviewed this concept, because if anybody did, if anybody thought critically about what they were placing on Discovery Channel and in the living room of every house in this country, it wouldn't have gotten past first base. But all they need is a Disney animator, a Discovery Channel special program, and voila, you have misinformation going into the houses across the land and around the world. And once you get that out there, they've paid money for production. They're not going to take it down. But what I found interesting is that the standard for a very, very long time, actually many, many decades, and even many decades before I was a scientist, tectonics, plate tectonics, this idea that plates somehow magically move around the Earth somehow, and then in the middle of continents, this forms mountains. This has been standard fare for, as I say, decades and decades and decades, because there's a term called uniformitarianism, kind of a long term, that means that Earth experienced all of its development slowly and deliberately over very long periods of time, and that applied to evolution, biological evolution, evolution of the species, to geology, to all of the various different forms of study of the Earth and the development of the solar system. It was believed that the Earth formed and that nothing from outside really affected it. Maybe an asteroid now and then would collide with Earth, but other than that, that was the end of the story. And of course, clearly denying the concepts of Velikovsky. Now, Velikovsky was the one that pointed out the ancient texts where mountains were built because a comet came by. And of course, when I did my studies at Cornell back in the late 70s and was actually seeing data come in, it was very clear to me. And remember that when I was at Cornell, I had never heard about Velikovsky. I did all of my work independently, came up with the logical conclusions of the plasma discharge comet model, that it formed, that comets, big comets would form planets, etc. All of that I came up with totally independently. And it was after that that a friend of mine, I was telling him about the publications I was, the papers I was publishing, that type of thing. And he said, you know, there's this guy, and he mispronounced the name. I'll never forget it. He says, this Velikovsky guy. Did you ever read his book? So I said, no. And so I went and got Worlds in Collision, and I sat down and read for the first time the Velikovsky books. This is while I was at Cornell. And later, this is actually after, at the very end of the time period when I was at Cornell, and I'm reading this and going, gee, this guy is describing in historical terms what my scientific work has been saying all along, the electrical discharges, the mountain building, the ability of comets to become planets, etc. So that was part of the interesting thing also, is because I was right in the backyard of a guy named Carl Sagan, who was instrumental in getting rid of Velikovsky, burying the idea of Velikovsky. But isn't it interesting that no more were the pages closed on the Velikovsky affair, as it is called, than the standard astronomers started realizing they needed colliding asteroids to explain a lot of the things you could see in the solar system. And now they're even using colliding asteroids to explain mountain building. I want to refer to one of the early concepts that I saw in data coming back from space probes. And this is a picture that I saw as it came in off the space probe, a picture of the moon of Jupiter called Callisto. Callisto is one of the four major Galilean Jupiter moons. And on one side of Callisto was a great big crater. And around that crater was a series of rings. And I looked at this picture, and I said, you know, this looks very much like structures that we used to create in the laboratory. And so here at the very center of this ringed structure with many, many concentric rings, which look like iron. Now, let me explain the experiment that you can do in the laboratory. You run a wire through a table and put a piece of paper on the table, white piece of paper, and then you run a wire vertically through the table. Now you pass a, you put iron filings on the table. Just you could take a file and create these, take a piece of iron and file off, you know, little filings in the, so it's basically like a handful of dust, and throw that on the table around the wire. Then you pass an electrical current through that wire, and magically all of the iron lines up like little rings around the wire in concentric rings. And this was exactly what the surface of Callisto looked like, with in dead center in the middle a big crater. So I had literally identified the first visual picture in the solar system confirming that electrical discharges can form mountainous patterns and burn holes in a planetary surface and also affect the surrounding area. So this was the first confirmation. And by the way, a picture, the three pictures of this are in my Planet X Comets and Earth Changes book. On page at the very end in the appendices, I have reprinted the three-part comet paper that was published back then in the early 1980s. And on page 69 of part 2 of the three-part comet paper is the series of pictures. So if you have my Planet X Comets and Earth Changes book, take a look, go back to the appendices, page 69 of part 2 of the three-part comet paper, and you will see those pictures. You'll see the actual satellite picture of Callisto, and then let me see. I'll go back and take a look. I have the book in my hand right now. Okay. The first picture is the actual satellite photo of the planetary surface of the moon. Secondly, is a diagram, kind of a penned or inked diagram, showing all of the surface features. And then the third picture is a picture of the experiment that I was talking about, where a wire goes through the table, a white piece of paper with the iron filings, and then a current goes through the wire, causing the rings of iron to form around the wire, concentric rings. And so that's all shown on page 69 of part 2 of my 3-part comment paper, once again at the end of my Planet X Comets and Earth Changes book. And as I said, this was the first physical confirmation in the solar system of electrical discharges hitting a planetary surface, causing craters, or in this case, a burn mark in the surface, a very large deep crater, and then the concentric rings around, which were an after effect of the electrical current passing into that planetary or moon lunar surface. So very interesting. So that is one of the electrical ways in which the cosmos has the ability to develop mountains and mountainous structures. You can also see that due to the impact, the tremendous electrical current that snapped and hit that planet, that it actually formed, besides the rings, which were obviously iron or iron oxide, forming the rings around the initial burn hole in the middle, you could see a concentric mountain ranges form. So there must have been a tremendous physical impact when that electrical discharge hit the lunar surface of Callisto. Once again, Callisto, a large moon, one of the 4 Galilean large moons of Jupiter. So that's one of the processes by which mountains can form in the solar system. We see on Mars very clear evidence of electrical discharges. And once again, I talk about this in my early papers, that it's very curious on Mars that there are 3 volcanoes lined up perfectly in a row, and they very much resemble burn holes in the planetary surface. So as Venus came by, this actually gives us a very good track of the direction that Venus came. Venus, when it was in its cometary stage, before it became the planet Venus, that the large comet, and it cannot be confirmed that these 3 holes were from Venus. It could have been from some other event in the past of a large comet coming by and encountering Mars. But at any rate, it's very clear that it's like zap, and then the discharge jumped, burned another hole in the planetary surface of Mars, and then jumped again, equidistant, these 3 volcanoes equidistant, the same distance apart, in other words, in an exact line across the surface of Mars. So once again, volcanic calderas, the cinder cone type of volcanoes on Mars, possibly and very likely having been formed by electrical discharges. Now, it would be very interesting to see what kind of minerals and other glasses, etc., would be formed because of that extreme high electrical discharge in that region. But they also could have been the result of burn marks. And once again, this goes back to my original identification of this type of activity on Callisto. As these pictures came in literally in real time when I was at Cornell University. So now let's talk about another mechanical mechanism for mountain building. And first of all, I want to talk about this idea of plate tectonics, because I've stated all along that plate tectonics could not explain mountain building, couldn't explain it by any stretch of the imagination. And here's why. The idea that plates move around the planet, we actually can measure this, but my explanation for the movement of the plates was that the Earth is simply relaxing from the very devastating encounter it had with Comet Venus many thousands of years ago. So you would expect volcanic activity, you would expect the Earth crustal movement to be going on. And if you look in terms of physics, now I've studied physics, unfortunately many geologists and astronomers kind of whisked through the physics courses and paid more attention to star charts and that type of activity. So they really are not well-trained physicists. So it's easy for them to imagine concepts that really don't work. The same with geologists and other fields, unfortunately. So when a physicist looks at the idea of plate tectonics, he starts to imagine where the forces come from. And the original idea was that these plates just kind of, it's a term called subduction, where one plate slides under the other and the other plate slides up over at the plate boundaries. Well, the problem with that is what force are you claiming exists to push these plates around the surface of the globe? And of course, what they're saying is, well, it's being pushed up from the heat from below, but if something is going to be pushed up at those plate boundaries, the plate boundaries are very delicate. They're structurally, it's not like steel, it's not like a rock, a solid rock. It's there's a good example. I remember seeing this in one of my physics books when I was in college, that they took an example of, let's take a chainsaw, a giant cosmic-sized chainsaw, and cut a square slice out of the surface of the Earth. And it showed the crane trying to pick up this piece of Earth, of the mantle and crust, and it said, if you tried to do this, it would all break apart into a million pieces. It's not like a rock, it's not like a solid piece of material or steel. You could not pick it up. And the point they were trying to make was that the surface of the Earth, the mantle and the crust, are very compressible. They're very loosely put together. And this was even with granite and mountains. On a large scale, it's not like a single piece of rock. So at any rate, if you tried to pick up a giant piece of this, it would all break apart. So the point is, if you took, and this is especially true at the plate boundaries where the material is newly formed and very soft. So if you took, here's my example, if you could take and kind of slice the Earth right at the plate boundary and you put great big hydraulic cylinders in there with great big plates on the side and you tried to push the plates apart and actually create a force, if you did that, all of that force would be absorbed locally. It would not push the plate east or west or laterally. And that's the point. And plate tectonics simply does not work. And the mountain ranges typically are in the middle of continents, so you would have to design some mechanism for the forces at the edges of the plate to get to the center of the plate and maintain that force, and it simply does not work. It breaks down on many different points. First of all, you don't have the force available from a vertical heat expulsion of the Earth to get that and change it into a transverse force is very difficult. I call it the hammock problem. It's like hanging in a hammock. If you attach a hammock to a tree and you lay in it, if you weigh 100 pounds, there's about 1,000 pounds of tension on the ropes because they're at a very sharp angle to the vertical. And the same holds true for plate tectonics. You would have to have absolutely enormous forces in the vertical direction to cause just a slight horizontal force. And thus the point is that if you had such an incredible vertical force, it would just disrupt the mantle locally and it wouldn't translate into a horizontal force that would move the plates around the globe. very simply put. So, the whole point is that plate tectonics as a cause of mountain building simply does not work. So what is the true cause of mountain building? What does cause the mountains to form on Earth and on other planets? Well, the actual cause, and this goes back to Velikovsky who observed it, and it goes back to my theoretical work that shows that large comets coming by a planet would send a large gravitational wave moving into the surface of that planet, and then the gravitational wave, the tidal wave of in the surface, in the actual mantle of the Earth, would roll around as a large wave in the Earth until it hits something relatively solid like an already existing mountain range. So when this wave comes in and hits an existing mountain range, it's going to stop, and all of that energy is going to go piling up into that mountain, causing it to create more mountains. Now, I want to talk about the many mountain ranges that I personally visited in my life. And specifically, let's talk about the Southern Colorado Rocky Mountains. And you could go to your favorite mountain range anywhere in the world. I've been to many mountain ranges. And over again, what you see is, first of all, you can see there was an initial absolute major event that caused the mountain range to form. But especially in the Southern Colorado Rockies, there were probably easily identifiable at least 20 different epochs of mountain building. Some of them included volcanic activity, some of them did not. And you can see the various mountain developments pushing up over old mountain ranges. So this is very interesting to see this. So the idea that plate tectonics caused mountain ranges, actually, if that were the cause, there's another great reason. You would only see a single mountain range with a single development of mountains, but that's not what you see. You see mountains piled up on top of older mountains. You see mountains coming in from the north. You see linear development from the east-west direction and the north-south direction and many directions in between. So this is the issue. When you really look at mountain building, there is another process that causes them, certainly not plate tectonics, certainly not an asteroid colliding into the far side of the planet. What happens, and now let's talk about tidal waves, and let's identify it with something that everybody is familiar with. Let's talk about the tides in the ocean. What causes the Earth's tidal wave or tidal activity of the oceans? And of course, it's caused by the moon, a celestial object, fairly large, about a sixth the diameter of Earth. It's a fairly large object, just a quarter of a million miles away, relatively close. And as the Earth spins on its daily spin rotational pattern, as it spins under the moon's gravitational field pulls up to the close side of the Earth, and on the far side of the Earth, the gravitational field is less than average, so the ocean actually bulges out on the other side. So you get a dual bulge on the Earth, a bulge towards the moon on the close side, and a bulge away from the moon on the far side of the Earth. And as the Earth turns every 24 hours, this bulge literally moves around the Earth under the moon. So this takes 24 hours for the bulge to move around the Earth once. What most people don't realize is that the Earth mantle and crust move up about an inch, whereas the ocean tidal waves typically are in about the 15-foot range. The tidal wave caused by the moon in the land is about an inch, and you're not going to feel this as you're standing on the Earth because it's a very slow process, but you actually, as you come around under the full moon, the Earth is actually lifting up about an inch and then drops back down after you pass underneath the full moon. As the full moon is moving around, it appears to be moving around in the night sky, If it's directly overhead, like it was this past week, then you are about a foot higher from the center, or about an inch higher, I mean, from the center of the Earth than you were when the moon was off to the side of the Earth. So now, imagine an object that's almost Earth-sized, something like the Venus, which is about, it's smaller than Earth, but still a very healthy, good-sized planet. Imagine that coming by, but it's not coming by slowly, it's coming by very fast. Now, it's bigger, so the tidal wave in the mantle is much bigger, and it's moving much faster. Let's go back and talk about the moon. As the Earth turns, the Earth is 25,000 miles in diameter, and it goes around in about a 24-hour period. So that's about 1,000 miles per hour. That's the speed of the tidal wave in the ocean and in the Earth's crust due to the moon. And the moon's just sitting there. It's not moving. It's in its orbit, but basically, in the period of a day, it doesn't move very far. So basically, the Earth is rotating underneath a relatively still sitting moon. But imagine something the size of Venus coming by, 4 to 5 times the size of the moon, much more massive, coming by very rapidly. So all of a sudden, it's bigger, the tidal wave is much bigger, and it's moving much faster. So you have a tremendous, tremendous amount of energy in the tidal wave that's set up in the Earth's mantle. As I said, this tidal wave of land is going to roll around the Earth following the comet nucleus. And as I said before, and I'll repeat it, not all comets are big. These big comets are very rare, and we have seen these. In fact, there is historical record that the comet that eventually became the planet Venus occurred in historical times. There's very good evidence of this in all of the ancient documents, the Oralinda, the Colbran, the Bible. All of these talk about the mountain building as part of the process, part of the devastation that occurred on Earth many thousands of years ago. It talks about Atlantis being dropped under the ocean, tremendous tidal waves of land. Land that used to be under the ocean is now above the ocean. Land that used to be in the center of a continent got pushed down and is now flooded with ocean water. And so when these tidal waves occur, it's really, the Earth is going through convulsions. And you can hear the people talk about this. The other thing that happens is it brings a tremendous tidal wave of water that washes over the land. And this is, once again, the ancients talk about this. It's very clear. So that is the true cause of mountain building, but you won't ever see that on the Discovery Channel. Why? Because it would have to admit that comets can be large, planetary in size, and that they come into the solar system and cause devastating results on Earth. Once again, that's one of the big issues for disinformation being put out about Comet Holmes, and that its nucleus is only 2 miles across. I don't think so. As I explained before, that the nucleus of Comet Holmes is probably 30 to 100 miles across. It's a relatively small comet, but still much bigger than the 2 miles being stated by the standard astronomical community. So at any rate, now I hope you have a much better feeling for how mountains do form, and they form very quickly. When this happens, there is very radical change in the structure of the Earth. Now let's look at the tectonic plates of Earth after such an event. They're jarred, they're pushed, they're crammed together, they're smashed together, they're pulled apart. Mountains are rammed up against each other. Now, all of a sudden, this object passes by, and the Earth starts, the term I use is relaxing. It starts to try and get back into shape. It's kind of like when you get up in the morning, and this muscle over here is sore, and that one over, and you start to move around, and you stretch, and that's what the Earth is doing. It's starting to relax and get back in shape. So when a couple of plates over here move, then the plate over here has to adjust. So the Earth is constantly adjusting and readjusting. This is how the Earth works, and we're still doing this. So when we have, for example, the big underwater landslide that caused the tsunami over in Sumatra just a couple of years ago, then it affected many other locations on Earth, and we had aftershocks and secondary earthquakes on other parts of the world. This is how the world works. This is the reaction. Now imagine an Earth that is 4 billion years old and nothing has ever come by. You know what the Earth would look like? It would be smooth as a billiard ball. There would be no mountains. The ocean would cover the Earth equally. There would be no land masses. There would be no mountain ranges. The Earth would be literally a smooth, baby behind smooth, billiard ball type of planet. The oceans would cover equally, an equal depth all over the world. That's what Earth would look like if it were not for the cometary encounters. There have been many, many, many of these throughout the Earth's history. We see, for example, salt deposits from ancient oceans that are miles underground. We have coal beds and coal deposits that are miles underground. They were once living plant matter, and now miles underground and covered with oil, impregnated with oil. How did these get there? What happened to the Earth that created the mishmash that we see today? You simply cannot, absolutely cannot, explain this using standard science, that somehow the Earth just did this all by itself. Absolutely cannot be explained. So why in the textbooks, why in schools, from the time kids are in kindergarten, going through grade school, through high school, on into the university, why are they taught things that patently could not be true? I ask you. And this is something, you don't have to be a university professor to see this. You don't have to have a PhD to understand that plate tectonics cannot explain mountain building. You don't have to have a planetary geological degree to know that an asteroid hitting a planet does not explain mountain building and the results that we see. There's only one explanation, and that is that mountains are built by a large object coming by a planet. There can be electrical discharges and burn marks. That's one of the symbols, and as I said, my very early work identified the very first incident of this recorded in the solar system on photographs that I saw when I was at Cornell. And the other mechanism is mechanical. We do see craters as a result of impacts of asteroids, but as I said, they are very localized and very identifiable by their circular shape, or somewhat oval shape, possibly, if the asteroid came in at an angle. But typically, the craters are pretty much round. And I hope that brings a certain amount of clarity to the idea of mountain building. Now, there are some very strange mountain ranges throughout the solar system. We have moons around the outer planets that one of them has it's a small moon, kind of a circular spherical moon, but it has a single mountain range that goes all the way around the planet and connects on the other side. Very interesting configuration. So if you ever get a chance, look up the planets and moons, look at their surface features. There are a lot of pictures of Mars. Just one more quick comment on Venus, which is a very young planet, and it has some mountain ranges, but they're totally volcanic and fluid. Their Venus surface is still in the process of formation, and the Magellan craft that went around Venus, orbiting Venus, went around a second time. It has a mapping radio system, and the second time it went around Venus, the mountains had already changed shapes. That shows you how fluid and how quickly changing the planet Venus is, because it is new, it's very fluid, and a very hot, molten surface without plates, no plate tectonics on Venus. Okay, quickly I want to just review once again the mail order address. Let me quickly give you the web address for information, and for if you're going to put any orders in before the holidays, December 9th is the cutoff date. Webpage, JMCC, S is in Sam, C is in Charlie, I is in Indigo.com. That's seven letters. JMCCSCI.com. That's short for JMCCSCI.com. And go to the secure web ordering page there. All the information is there. By mail order, the address, once again, JMCC, P.O. Box 58, Navarre, N-A-V-A-R-R-E, Minnesota, 55392. Once again, that's JMCC, P.O. Box 58, Navarre, N-A-V-A-R-R-E, Minnesota, 55392. And just quickly, I'll review the items. The Berkey water filter, that includes two filter elements plus the two extra filter elements. The free Kato WRX-911 shortwave radio, and free shipping to the 50 states, $339. And if you're an area that has fluoride in the water, I would suggest the additional pair of fluoride filters for $59. And by the way, you use two of those Berkey filter elements at a time. You keep the other two as spares, like a spare tire for your car, that you very well could need in an emergency. Or if you needed a lot of water, you could put all four filter elements in at one time. The Silver Biotics offer for mail order is $70. You get the 3 8-ounce bottles of Silver Biotics solution and the book by Dr. Kenneth Friedman on how to use the product. You get the caps, the spray caps, etc., that you use to apply the product. And then free shipping to the 50 states, that's $70. And the books, the suggestions that I have are $35 for the 3-book set. That's Planet X, Comets and Earth Changes, the Surviving Planet X Passage pamphlet, 60 pages, and the Atlantis to Tesla, and the Atlantis to Tesla, the Colburn Connection, that's $35 for those three. Add $25, so $60 for would include the weather book, and the complete set of books, which would include those books and the Calculate Primes book, which includes the DVD, the 3-hour lecture DVD, plus the 2-DVD set, which includes the 8 historical videos of my lectures, plus the first DVD lecture in the series. That's $140. That's the complete set. That's everything. And once again, the mail order address, JMCC, P.O. Box 58, Navarre, Minnesota, 55392. And once again, I am out of time. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.